Hello, everyone. Welcome to How We Work. I am so happy to be joined by today's guest. She is a powerhouse. She is the CEO of Rise and Design, the author of award-winning Lifelong Learning, Preparing for Jobs That Don't Even Exist Yet. I mean, I'm intrigued. And her work has been featured in The Economist, The Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, and Harvard Business Review. Please welcome Dr. Michelle Weiss.
Thank you so much for having me, Misha.
Did I say your surname correctly, Weiss? Yeah. Okay, great. So although I'm super excited to get into all your stuff and all the stuff that you do, we have a habit here, since we are work human, by starting the conversation talking about the human. Mm. So can you please tell our listeners who you are, Michelle, as a human?
Yeah, so I have a little family. I have a husband. I have two children who are 13 and 10. So I have one going through puberty, which is interesting.
Interesting, okay.
I am a human. It's actually fascinating because a lot of my work deals with this idea of human skills. And so I'm so excited to talk to you about this. I've had a really interesting life where none of it could have been mapped out in advance. I had a plan to be an English professor for the rest of my life. I had a tenure track job. I thought that was going to be it. And instead, I've kind of gone sort of and pivoted from one thing to another, ultimately leading me to sort of traverse the space of the future of education and the future of work. But so as a human, I think it's been a really interesting journey of adaptation and resilience, and also kind of using that past of being an English professor and thinking about long form fiction as a way of really inhabiting this mode of empathy for other people. It's just like a really interesting concept of this. It's actually a concept of a professor over at Northwestern who's come up with this idea of novelistic empathy. Mm-hmm. But it's just how do we really begin sort of with the pain points of those who are sort of struggling the most today? And that's kind of been sort of the driving force in a lot of the research that I've done since then.
Interesting. So what are some of those pain points?
Yeah. So in my book, Long Life Learning, we actually focus on the people who are sort of falling through the cracks of our education and workforce infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So people who are not earning a living wage and trying to understand what barriers exist. And it was really fascinating from these 100 one-hour interviews that we did. We kind of found these pain points coalescing around the same five areas. And one is just the need for better career navigation supports. Mm-hmm. The second is real sort of 360 degree wraparound support services for that human. Mm-hmm. The third is more targeted education. Instead of always kind of bundling education in a degree, how do we just get what we need in order to make our way forward? Mm-hmm. And then also, how do we do that on the job? How is that integrated into our work lives so that we're not always having to do this outside of work?
Right.
And then the final one is more transparent hiring practices. So how can we prove to employers that we can do the work ahead?
Absolutely. So what I know of your work, I think about you as a work futurist.
Yeah.
Would that be an accurate description?
I think so. Yeah. And what's interesting is I think we tend to sort of cordon off these kind of future of education conversations from the future of work. Mm-hmm. And in my research, what I've just sort of found over time is that they're one and the same. The future of education is the same as the future of work because our lives are extending in ways, our work lives are extending, right? We're staying in the workforce for far longer than we had anticipated. And so what that means is we're going to have to continuously retool and reskill ourselves. And in order to do that, we have to harness the power of education over and over again. So they're really the sort of same thing. And so we have to start shifting our minds to thinking about the workplace as the classroom of the future.
Perfect. So you mentioned skills. And you've spoken before about the need to highlight human skills in resumes and job searches. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what you think of as human skills, and how should employees suss out what are their human skills and translate them to organizations that they're trying to work for?
Yeah. one of the first jobs I got after I left academia was working with service members who were trying to translate and transition out of the military sort of sphere into mm-hmm. civilian careers. And so part of that translation process was how do they take the skills that they have and kind of turn it into the language of the civilian world. And so obviously some of that has to do with technical or technological skills or just, mm-hmm. you know, those more hard skills that we tend to think about. But what's fascinating to think about also is that employers, when they list what they want and what they need, they end up enumerating a ton of different human skills. But it's hard for us to just sort of prove to an employer that we're really great at communication, even if we are, mm-hmm. and even if that's what the job posting is asking for. So a lot of my research has been to try to break down what those human skills are in the actual language of the labor market. So the exciting thing about today is we have so much data. We have so many different kinds of labor market analytics that exist mm-hmm. that we can actually see the ways in which people migrate and move through the job market. Mm-hmm. So we can see like how their resume shifts from one job to the next, how they begin to articulate what those competencies are. And so what you can actually do when you go through that kind of parsing exercise is you can start to realize that communication means something very specific when we're talking about it in HR versus when we're talking about it in finance mm-hmm. versus when we're talking about it in marketing, advertising, and PR. So that same skill of communication breaks down into something that sounds more like search engine optimization or brand management or storytelling when we're talking about it in PR. Mm-hmm. And then when we're talking about it in HR, we know that we're going to have to be able to onboard people and recruit through the internet and write an employee handbook. Those are the different kinds of skills that emerge. Mm-hmm. And what we found through this analysis is that those human skills end up actually morphing into something that looks more like a hybrid skill. So it's both human and technical at the same time. So perfect illustration is if you want to go into the world of journalism, mm-hmm. you can't just sort of be, you would think that you would need to be an amazing writer, an amazing communicator, both, you know, in written form and orally. What we maybe don't know is that now journalism, the field, looks a whole lot more like an information technology field.
Really?
Yeah. And so employers are asking for web analytics, CSS, you know, that SEO work. Mm-hmm. And so we have to kind of be able to understand what it is that the job market is exactly asking for, because it's mm-hmm. going to matter what industry domain we're talking about. How do we begin to speak that language and translate what we bring to the table into that language? Mm-hmm. And part of that is looking inside ourselves and also realizing that we have so many hidden and informal skills mm-hmm. that are not captured through some sort of degree or diploma, mm-hmm. right? When I take care of a child with special needs, I develop different kinds of skills in empathy, patience, compassion, communication, right? And I need to be able to take those informal hidden skills and make them visible to a future employer. And so that's the moment we find ourselves in. We want those human skills. And yeah. especially in an age of AI, we want that kind of human competitive advantage. Mm-hmm. But we also have to build the different kinds of mechanisms we need to validate those kinds of human skills and say, that's a really valuable skill. I want to hire you because you have those hidden skills.
This is so fascinating to me. I love the idea of, you know, skills that you develop in your life being considered when you're trying to apply for a position that needs those same skills. I think it has, you know, potential for women re-entering the workforce, for mm-hmm. example, after a break, right? And unfortunately, our society doesn't consider taking care of children real work. But to your point, there are skills that you develop. I'm just thinking, like, what would the validation process look like? Is it a structured interview? Is it, you know, a role play? Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts about, you know, how that could actually play out?
Yeah, so there are different ways of thinking about it, but the crux of it is we have to get better at assessing mm-hmm. people. It is, we have these different kinds of proxies for fit, right? And
right.
We know how problematic that concept is, right? And so, yes, there are performance-based assessments where you can imagine creating simulations or scenarios both in person and also virtually to test out some of these different kinds of skills. I personally have taken some of these different kinds of simulations, and they don't have to be super sophisticated. Like, you don't need to wear an Oculus, you know.
But Oculus is cool, Michelle.
Yeah, you could actually do it with pretty sort of dumbed down graphics on a computer, but it's really fascinating. For instance, I used one company's version of this where I had to teach children about the three branches of government. And there were seven little children in front of me. They can do this for all different kinds of situations. But you see enough to sort of notice the nonverbal gestures of the people on the screen. You see the way they slump or turn away or talk more quietly, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're learning to kind of pay attention to those signals and respond to them. And then a coach is watching you do this kind of simulation, and then they give you feedback on what you might have done better. This works for thinking about the bias we bring when we enter a situation, all different kinds. How do you take and receive feedback, right? It's really hard. And the only way we learn how to do it today is through a real high stakes situation,
right?
Where we have to deliver the bad news to someone. And this gives you a formative experience where you're getting to practice these skills in a low stakes environment. So there are different versions of this. Mm-hmm. But what you're suggesting is, you know, we don't have great mechanisms to validate those competencies today.
Right.
And you're absolutely right. We need to figure out how to think about those adjacencies, those adjacent skills that we have that we can port over from one domain to another. Because we know people do this all the time when they're hiring. So I was talking to one recruiter who works for marketing an SEO group, and she ends up hiring her HR people for this tech group specifically from hospitality.
Interesting.
Right? Because she knows that those people know how to pay attention to the pain points of people, right? Or they know also that sort of all those little cuts and microaggressions add up to something,
right?
That really are meaningful. So she specifically gathers people from there, knows that there's a way to kind of take those people and train them in whatever they need to know for this kind of tech-oriented HR work. And that's the attitude we all have to have, is we have to understand who might we kind of take from these pools that we haven't acknowledged before and sort of break down some of the barriers that we've built up in those industries. I've even heard this from folks in material and handling equipment, right? The MHE side of things. Mm-hmm. There is a space in which the perfect adjacent group is in construction management or construction. It would make sense for a lot of those people to kind of move into these fields. Mm-hmm. But the MHE folks kind of are not used to or don't want to give these people a chance because they have certain biases and expectations about what they need, right? We're always looking for that exact prior experience.
Yeah.
And so that's the piece that we have to start getting better at, because we know we can't just keep buying talent.
Mm-hmm.
We have to build talent. And so what that means is people aren't going to come wholly made, ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to come 80% of the way there with those really valuable human skills that are harder to teach than those technical skills. I would rather take that and then build on that and build those technical skills from there.
That's so interesting. This reminds me of some things that used to be really common in the past that seem to have fallen out of favor, things like assessment centers, you know, or I'm thinking about some really, really old research in my field around biodata.
Mm-hmm.
And they found back in the day that people who had built a model airplane in the past, made better pilots. And I wonder if, you know, there's some kind of synergy there between what you're advocating for the future and things like that that we used to do in the past.
Yeah. So one really great example of this is being able to read someone's eyes. There's actually an assessment called Reading the Eyes. And so there's a professor at Harvard who has taken that assessment and tried to understand, does this maybe help someone be a better or more productive team leader? And in fact, he was able to sort of see a correlation between the folks who were able to perform better on that Reading the Eyes test, which is just simply cutouts of people's eyes. And you have to sort of discern what emotion are they evoking through that sort of facial expression, which you just see through the eyes. And it turns out that the people who could read those eyes better were actually the ones who were able to sort of facilitate kind of that better functioning team.
Yeah.
And it also goes back to just like real basics, like kind of pre-K kindergarten basics around these human skills. It comes out from the research of someone like Alex Pentland over at MIT, where he's seen that people who sort of talk and listen in equal measure actually lead to kind of facilitating those most productive teams more than IQ, skills, personalities. It's actually that ability to just listen and take turns that leads to that better teamwork. So yes, we got to get better at sort of figuring out how might we kind of sense whether this person will be successful on our team based on some of those really critical human skills, because we always know when they're missing.
Yes, we do, don't we? We do.
It's so painful when they're missing.
Yeah, and this has, I think, you know, there is this discussion now about, you know, doing away with college degrees as requirements. And I think this could really fill that gap and give opportunities to people who may not have had the chance to go to college, you know, for economic reasons, right? They're from a disadvantaged background. This could be really, really cool.
Yes.
So in your book, you talk about the need for a learner-centered ecosystem to better equip people for jobs of the future. Can you talk a little bit more about this learner-centered ecosystem and what are the core tenets of that ecosystem?
Yeah, so I alluded to them earlier, those kind of five principles, but in order for us to be able to move through a longer work life and potentially have to go through more job changes than we ever anticipated, we need a better functioning ecosystem where we can navigate from one job to the next. If we think about how we have to move today, just from one job to the next, it's really hard. We don't have sort of one way that we go. We kind of sort of depend on our networks for referrals, or sometimes we're posting things through job portals. What we need is a way to understand, where do I go? Who do I turn to? Which learning experience do I take? How do I make this more understandable for more people in the future? And so that's what I mean by a healthier learning ecosystem. And what that means is we actually have to build an ecosystem that is more navigable, more supported, more targeted, more integrated, and more transparent. Those five principles that I mentioned earlier. And so when we think about something like career navigation or integrated earning and learning, we can all think of maybe a few examples that exist today of organizations that are doing really cool on the job training as an example, right? But it's not sort of systematically or wholly understood by everyone out there, right? So how do we make it so that not just a few know that, you know, I go here for career navigation supports, or I go over here for some wraparound support services, or I go here for the right learning experience. We also have to remember that there are now over a million different kinds of credentials out there flooding our education and labor markets. So how are we supposed to know which one to choose? And so the idea of a learning ecosystem is that not just that we have one of these options out there, but that all five of these pieces are knit together in a way that's easily navigable. So I know where to go for my career navigation support. I know how to figure out where I am today relative to where I want to go. I know what my skills are. And then I get the wraparound supports that I need, whether it's mental health support, whether it's financial aid, or whether it's getting access to transportation and childcare services, whatever it is that I need to have in order to be successful, that's also easily available. And then I need to know which targeted learning experience I need. Sometimes I might need a degree, But sometimes I might just need 4 or 11 right. different competencies, right, to move forward. So where do I go for that? And then which employer am I going to turn to who actually takes the long view on my career and sort of says, I believe in you, I'm going to actually develop you and train you over time? How do we know where to go for those integrated earning and learning experiences? And then transparent hiring. We need to know that more employers are going to give us a shot, not just based on whether or not we have a degree, mm-hmm. right? They're going to look at our skills. They're going to see what kinds of human skills we bring to the table. So a learner-centered ecosystem is, how do we make this more navigable for us as the job seekers, right? Because this isn't just about the people who are not earning a living wage. It's about all of us.
Right.
As we think about a longer life and a longer work life, we may actually be more in the realm of having to navigate 20 or 30 job changes to come. I think what people don't understand today is that our baby boomers mm-hmm. are not graduating. They're retiring. They're retiring with an average of 12 job changes.
Wow.
So that means we have more than that right. we may have to expect. So if we think about how hard it is just to get that one job, I don't want to do that 20 or 30 times more in my future. So how do we knit these elements together? How do we build coalitions? Because we don't have to start from scratch. All of this stuff exists. It's just not pulled together and knit together in a way that is easily understandable. So that's what I mean by kind of building that learner-centered ecosystem, understanding from the pain points of the people who are facing the most burdens and barriers today, mm-hmm. we can gain the greatest insights into how we make this easier for all of us.
So part of the title of your book has to do with jobs that don't even exist yet. Do you have a perspective on, you know, jobs that don't exist but will in the future, especially with the advent of AI?
Yes. So I can't name the uh-huh. jobs that will exist, but what's great is, and this again comes back to those human skills, mm-hmm. with something like generative AI, with these technological advancements that we're seeing that are growing at these kind of exponential rates, we have to remember how we begin to really hone in on our human skills. Mm-hmm. What we have to understand is while they are our unique competitive advantage today, mm-hmm. it's not innate within us. It's not sophisticated. Those skills like empathy, emotional intelligence, systems thinking, critical mm-hmm. thinking, right? This kind of social intelligence, it's not just innate and built within us in a way that is, you know, functioning at a really high level, right? Because we know when we work with people who have low human skills, right? Mm-hmm. They don't have that kind of emotional intelligence. They don't have self-awareness. So the onus is on us to build up and get more sophisticated in our human skills. And we have to think about that even as we think about on-the-job training. Mm-hmm. I think we tend to kind of cordon off today. On the job training sounds a whole lot more like compliance training or right. risk mitigation mm-hmm. work, right? Or when people are actually building those skills for the future jobs, they're often more technical or technological in nature. Mm-hmm. We're not actually thinking about how to broaden someone's sense of range, mm-hmm. That ability to kind of take ideas from one domain and apply them in another. So this is kind of the work ahead, is how do we really start to focus on our human skills, build them, validate them, right? How do we have our performance measures reflect that sort of development of those human skills? That's how we're actually going to be able to make those pivots for the jobs that we can't name today, right? Because we mm-hmm. have to be resilient. We have to have grit. Mm-hmm. We have to be able to pivot. We have to be able to take some of our knowledge and understand that maybe we might need to retool ourselves and have that humility to understand that there are skills that we need to develop over time. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of a huge shift. We know that generative AI is going to actually take away even a lot of knowledge economy jobs, right? Yes. We thought that automation was going to hurt blue collar work. Mm-hmm. Today, the people who are most concerned about being automated out of work are the people with college degrees. So you're not immune as you think about, even if you have a fulfilling job today, even if you have multiple degrees today, you're not immune to these changes that are happening. So again, how do we prepare ourselves? How do we prepare for those jobs that don't exist? It's a real focus on those human skills.
So you mentioned a few human skills like empathy, systems thinking. Are there any human skills you think that are particularly important for right now? And are there any that you think will be particularly important in the future?
Yes, I think two of my favorites are probably self-awareness mm-hmm. and resilience. Self-awareness is really understanding, you know, how you come off to other people and also what, you know, you're able to read people's nonverbal gestures mm-hmm. well enough to understand how you must communicate in a particular situation, right? And that is just sort of so key because you're able to kind of look at someone and understand this person needs some time before I speak with them, or this person is in need of help, right? We need to be able to read people better. And in a world where we had close to 3 years of masking and distance and a lot of Zoom conferences, right? We've gotten worse at reading one another. So I think that is a huge core skill. And it's also really going to be fascinating to see how our young people do as they come into the workforce, mm-hmm. having gone through that period where they've missed out on that practice of building that kind of skill, understanding how to read people, how they're coming off to mm-hmm. other people, how they make eye contact, right? Because mm-hmm. empathy comes from the eyes. Our pupils actually dilate when someone is sad mm-hmm. and we're in human-to-human contact. Our eyes actually react to each other. Our pupils dilate in a certain way in reaction to each other. That doesn't happen on a Zoom screen, right? And so that's one of my favorites. And then the resilience piece is really that ability to kind of pivot and stretch yourself and understand that you're going to have to take some of these skills that you have. Some of them may become obsolete, and that's okay. That's not a failure.
Right.
You have to kind of get creative about how you sort of take a risk with what you have. Maybe you have that sort of 75% of what it takes to get that next job.
Mm-hmm.
And again, sort of assess, okay, what do I need to do to be a better contender for that work? How do I build the skills? Mm-hmm. And also, again, understanding what human skills might be critical. Because the human skills are not sort of the same for every single industry domain.
Right.
They're going to shift, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it will be systems thinking. Other times it's going to be that more compassion or mm-hmm. communication piece. So it's that kind of ability to just sort of adapt and be resilient.
Is there a way that you think that people can develop better self-awareness and resilience?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is, there are these different kinds of simulation-based assessments and mm-hmm. practice. It's also a matter of when you have the opportunity to build those bonds in person, mm-hmm. if it's not too hard, we need to actually build in the right kind of cadence to facilitate those sorts of meetings. So even if you know you could potentially do a web conference call with someone, but they only live, 10 minutes away, make that extra effort to get that human-to-human contact. Because again, we're just sort of building awareness off of screens.
Right.
We all now have at least, 7 different screens at our disposal, right? But how do we actually get back to the basics of building those kind of kindergarten skills for the mm-hmm. future of work? It's how do we engage and take turns? How do we listen better? How do we read? How do I read your eyes better, right? And understand what you're truly feeling, mm-hmm. what you may be feeling. So it's. I think those are the pieces. And I think for the resilience piece, it's really hard because it requires risk taking, right? Mm-hmm. It requires patience and also uncertainty because we can't anticipate those jobs that are going to exist in the future. We have to understand that education isn't sort of one and done in the first quarter of our lives,
mm-hmm.
right? We have to break away from that model where we learn, then we earn, and then we retire,
mm-hmm.
right? This is going to be learn, earn, learn, earn over and over again, sometimes both at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's a very different mindset to take on. So it just takes time to realize that just because I got that degree isn't an automatic ticket into the middle.
class. It's going to be harder than I imagined, right? And so, but these are stepping stones. All of these things, nothing is wasted along the way. Mm-hmm. So even if you start off your career as an English professor, right, it doesn't mean you have to go in a certain track, right? You just have to be able to sort of take what is most valuable from that experience and move in, just try to sort of move in that new direction. And part of it is just also understanding that our career pathways are not linear.
Yes.
And they're also not going from sort of the bottom left corner to the upper right corner. It's not moving in that trajectory. You do not have to move up and to the right. It can sometimes look like a very messy spaghetti meal, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that's part of our kind of our new model of long life learning.
That's amazing. So this has been a really, really fascinating and intriguing conversation. As we close here, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners that you want to leave them with?
I think this can sometimes sound a little bit amorphous or overwhelming, right? Mm-hmm. To think about a longer work life and to think about how are we going to make those 20 or 30 job pivots for the future? I think one concrete thing we can begin to do today is just write down a paper list with a paper and pencil and pen and start to kind of catalog all the different kinds of experiences you've had, both formal and informal, being a babysitter, working as a barista, working at Target, whatever it may be, right? And you begin to list out all of those experiences and you try to begin to sort of think about what human skills did I actually gain in that experience, right? Maybe I learned how to communicate in chaos as a barista, right? You learn certain kinds of customer service skills, but they differ from job to job. What makes it different, right? And you can write it out and you begin to understand how your shape has kind of changed over time. Where have you begun to actually build a certain kind of human skill set that really connects very well to the labor market, maybe, and then others that I might have to do more work to explain to a prospective hiring manager why these skills are so important, right? So it's one concrete thing we can do. It doesn't mean you have to go on and get some sort of fancy skills-based assessment with an AI-based platform, which you can, they exist.
Right.
But one of those things we can just begin to do is look at our past life, just sort of what has brought us here from that personal perspective, but also from a professional perspective, and understand maybe what that spaghetti noodle pathway looks like, because there is growth and there is change that occurs. We just haven't had enough time to sort of reflect on what it is that moves us, what's that kind of kernel of that why that really truly moves us in the work that we do, and where do we lose track of time, right? Where do we get in the flow of work because we love that kind of thing that we're, even if we're on YouTube, what is it that we're actually looking at when we look at what we're looking at on YouTube? What is that kernel of excitement that kind of moves through all the kinds of content that we consume today? That's even just a great starting point of understanding that it's again, nothing is wasted, right? There's something that we are doing, and we just have to get better at articulating, surfacing that, and then beginning that translation process for the future.
I love that advice. Great note to end on. Thank you so much for joining us today, Michelle.
You're so
welcome.
It was
a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.